This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of May 26, 2005.
All right, freeze! Police!
Bad Cop No Donut!
Bad, 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 bad.
Cop, 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 cop.
No, 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 no. Donut, 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 donut.
It's under law, and I rule.
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for a special report on Ontario's first coroner's inquest into a taser-related death. Peter Lamonde died after police in London, Ontario, shocked him with a taser on May 14th of last year. The coroner's jury recommended that all frontline police officers in the province should be armed with and trained in the use of tasers. We'll have a lot more on that later, but first, let's have a look at what the police did to us this week. A Chattanooga, Tennessee police officer who already faces federal charges of extorting money for sex while he was on the job was indicted by a grand jury on a rape charge last Thursday. An Associated Press report says that Officer Jerry Davis has been charged in connection with a 1998 rape. An FBI agent testified that Davis picked up a woman who was too intoxicated to drive home from a nightclub and then took her to his home, where she says the officer raped her. After the woman filed a complaint against the officer, she says he harassed her by pulling over her car repeatedly. The agent also testified that another woman claimed that Davis touched her in an inappropriate sexual manner during a search. In that case, the officer was also accused of harassing the woman after she filed a complaint against him. After the rape allegation first surfaced in 1998, Davis was suspended for 28 days for conduct unbecoming an officer and for lying to investigators. A sheriff's deputy in Hammond, Louisiana, was arrested last Thursday and charged with aggravated rape. According to an Associated Press report, Deputy Christopher Labatt was arrested after a month-long investigation involving the FBI. The deputy's arrest is linked to the arrest of a local pastor who told the police that he could implicate others in his church involved with alleged sex acts with children and animals, which occurred 2 years ago. Deputy Labatt is being held without bond. A police officer in Jackson, Mississippi, was sentenced to 20 years in prison this week on civil rights charges connected to a sexual assault. According to the Associated Press, Officer Maceo Simmons was convicted in March of committing a sexual assault while under the color of law. The victim of the assault, who was 19 years old at the time of the September 1999 incident, says that Simmons placed her in his patrol car at a traffic stop and then took her to a remote location and assaulted her while another officer, Thomas Ketchings, acted as a lookout. The victim was so terrified by the events that it took her a year to report the incident. The pair of officers were arrested in December 2000, but were both eventually acquitted on charges of sexual battery and conspiracy to commit sexual battery. Ketchings agreed to testify against Simmons at the federal trial in exchange for immunity. A police officer in Columbia, Missouri, was found guilty of first-degree murder by a jury on Saturday. Stephen Rios was accused of killing a younger man who he had been having a sexual relationship with. A report from Court TV says that the guilty verdict carries an automatic sentence of life in prison with no parole. The jury heard evidence that the officer killed the man because he was threatening to expose the relationship. The victim's classmates said he told them he suspected that his new lover was married and that he planned to confront him before he was found dead. A police officer in Minneapolis, Minnesota, is on leave after being accused of having sex with a high school student. WCCO reports that Officer Brian Potoknik was suspended from his job earlier this month. He had been working one day each week at the local high school attended by his victim. The student said she carried on a 2-year sexual relationship with the officer, during which she claims he gave her a sexually transmitted disease. She says that she and the officer had sex at the officer's home 3 to 5 times a week, and that they also had sex in the officer's marked patrol car. During the investigation and suspension, Potoknik has been ordered to remain in his home between the hours of 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., and internal affairs investigators have been ordered to ensure that the officer complies. The officer has not yet been charged with a crime. An Iowa state trooper pleaded not guilty to charges that he sexually assaulted a 7-year-old more than a decade ago. An Associated Press report says that trooper Carl Kluender is accused of abusing the girl at the home of his parents in Denison, Iowa, between 1992 and 1994. Kluender was arrested, charged with second-degree sexual abuse, and fired from his job in April. A police officer in Galloway, New Jersey, has pleaded guilty to a charge of official misconduct. A WNBC report says that Officer Eric Allen was originally charged with sexual assault and official misconduct after he had sex with a 17-year-old student at the high school where he worked. He pleaded guilty to the official misconduct charge and will be sentenced on July 28th. Allen had sex with the student 6 times between February 24th and March 28th. He is expected to be sentenced to 180 days of house arrest, be fired from his job, and will not be allowed to work as a public employee in the state of New Jersey. Last Friday, a judge ruled that the confession of a police officer in Clementon, New Jersey, accused of sexual assault, would be admissible at trial. The Courier-Post reports that the trial of Officer Wayne Coates is scheduled to begin with jury selection on September 7th. He's accused of sexually assaulting a woman in his patrol car in July 2002. He's facing charges including sexual assault, official misconduct, and tampering with evidence, which could see him behind bars for up to 10 years. He has been offered a plea agreement under which he would be sentenced to a maximum 5 years in state prison in exchange for pleading guilty to official misconduct charges. Last Friday, a jury convicted a Balcones Heights, Texas police officer of conspiring with another officer to violate the rights of 5 women who were molested by the pair at a police station. The Associated Press reports that the officers arrested the 5 women on suspicion of public intoxication in November 2002. Rolando Trevino is facing 10 years in prison when he is sentenced on August 5th. The other officer, Dwayne Guidry, was convicted on the same charge and other charges relating to a separate rape at his trial in January. Guidry will be sentenced next month. A police officer in Gatesville, Texas, was arrested last week along with 2 other people in connection with the September 2004 bank robbery. The Associated Press says that Officer Wesley Friedrich is charged with being an accessory after the fact. He allegedly had knowledge of the robbery and assisted the alleged perpetrators. One of the 2 alleged robbers is Friedrich's wife. The officer is accused of helping his wife and their other accomplice bury the proceeds of the robbery about a week after it occurred. The officer is facing a possible 10 years in prison if he is convicted.
As soon as they saw me, they started running down the block. I ran around my house and I saw a Bangladeshi man. He was laying in a pool of blood.
He was too badly injured in the head and eyes, and he cannot speak.
And I told the police officer, I said, listen, I was like, do you want myself, or better yet, the 2 teenage boys that got a better view of the mob of kids? Do you want us to go around with you to see if we can find them? And he was like, nah. He just was like, ah. He's like, don't worry about it. He's like, if we catch them, we find them, he's like, we'll give you a call. And he shut the ambulance door, and that was it. I think it was a combination of laziness and the fact that he was Bangladeshi. Probably didn't care. The fact that these kids got away with it, and now they could come back anytime. Now that they feel, oh, you know what, we got away with it, let's do it again, they'll come back. And next time it could be, you know, a neighbor or my mom, that they'll be their next victim.
Police in New York City have bungled a murder investigation by failing to file a report about it and refusing help from people who witnessed the crime. A report from WABC says that the fact that detectives were never notified about the murder gave the perpetrators a 2-week head start in getting away with it. A Bangladeshi father of 3 was brutally beaten to death in Brooklyn 2 weeks ago on his way home from work. On Monday, outraged citizens protested at the site of the man's death and are demanding answers from the police. On the night of the beating, police failed to file a report about the incident. Several witnesses who could have identified the killers approached the police with offers of help, which were ignored or actively declined. Last week, we reported that a police officer in New York City treated a woman so roughly when he was arresting her for disorderly conduct that he caused her to have a miscarriage. This week, a report in the New York Post identified the officer in question as Matthew Hathaway. The victim claims she was denied medical attention for more than an hour after requesting it. Police say an ambulance was called at some point. The incident is still under investigation by police. A sheriff's deputy in Churchill County, Nevada, has been sentenced to 2 days in jail on a battery charge. An Associated Press report says that Deputy Bradley Bergman was accused of fondling an 18-year-old woman who he had invited to his home. She testified that the officer grabbed her once she was inside the home. Bergman pleaded guilty last week to a reduced misdemeanor battery charge and was also sentenced to 90 days of house arrest, 250 hours of community service, and was ordered to pay a $500 fine. A police officer in Seattle, Washington, is under investigation after her weapon was discharged during an off-duty fight with a homeless person. KIRO reports that the officer was not on the job when she got into an argument with a man outside of a bar on March 18th. The officer's weapon was discharged at some point during the altercation. A Los Angeles police officer was arrested after a boating accident on Saturday in Monterey County. An Associated Press report says that Officer David Guzman was involved in a hit-and-run accident where he drove his boat into another one and then fled without offering help to two injured boaters. Guzman was arrested for boating under the influence of alcohol, failing to stop at the scene of an accident, and failing to render aid. One of the two people injured in the incident suffered a crushed vertebra, broken pelvis, and kidney and spleen damage. Guzman is on leave, pending the completion of an investigation. A police officer in Shelby, North Carolina, was arrested last Tuesday for stealing drugs from ambulances. WSOC reports that Officer Joseph Mowry stole drugs including Demerol and morphine from ambulances in Shelby. The officer, who also works as a firefighter, has been charged with breaking and entering a motor vehicle, larceny, and possession of stolen goods. The fire department suspended Mowry from his job, but his status as a police officer is not known because the police department will not say. The former chief of police in Parma, Ohio, has been sentenced to 10 days in jail for covering up evidence of tax evasion. An Associated Press account says that Chief Mark Manning, who was convicted of destroying records of his off-duty employment in a bowling alley, will also serve 4 months of house arrest. At a hearing last Thursday, testimony was given which said that Manning had colluded with the owner of the bowling alley to destroy all employment records subpoenaed in the investigation. Two other Parma officers, Dan Zarzechny and Vincent Samanik, are currently awaiting trial on their felony tax evasion charges in connection with the same investigation. Another dozen officers are facing internal discipline. A police officer in Huron, Ohio, was arrested after he was observed throwing two kittens out of his car window while traveling at 70 miles per hour. According to an Associated Press account of the story, Officer Derek Wilhelm was witnessed throwing a kitten from his car by someone driving the car behind him. He was seen doing the same thing again 30 minutes later and was then stopped by police. Authorities were able to locate one of the kittens, which was treated for minor injuries. Wilhelm has been charged with 2 counts of animal cruelty and 2 counts of abandoning animals. He's facing a possible 90 days in jail. A police officer in Chester, South Carolina, has been suspended after being accused of cruelty to animals. According to the Rock Hill Herald, animal control officers responding to a complaint discovered more than 24 dogs, some very sick or near death, on property belonging to Officer Michael Young. Investigators discovered 16 dogs in a pen outside of the house with no access to food. Inside the officer's home, they discovered 9 dogs in the living room and 7 more in one of the bedrooms. 7 of the dogs had to be put down, and the rest have been moved to an animal shelter. Young has been suspended with pay until his court date, which is currently unknown. A police officer in Marion, Illinois, has been fired for a series of offenses. The Marion Chronicle-Tribune reports that Officer Brad Wright was fired following a 3-2 vote of the local Board of Public Works. He was accused of a number of offenses, including assisting a friend who was charged with driving while impaired, and failure to respond properly to assist a fellow officer. A sheriff's deputy in Quay County, New Mexico, was arrested last Friday and charged with criminal trespass. According to the Quay County Sun, police were called after the deputy, Leonard Garcia, walked into the home of his former wife uninvited and smelling of alcohol and entered her son's bedroom. Garcia left the home shortly afterwards and allegedly threatened his wife when she confronted him. A Newport, Rhode Island police officer pleaded no contest to an assault charge last Thursday. The Newport Daily News says that Officer Morris Sellers is accused by witnesses of throwing a man to the ground and then punching him 10 times during an off-duty fight outside of a bar on October 21st. The judge then decided that the charge would be removed from court records in 1 year, provided the officer does not get into any more trouble. The officer was also ordered to contribute $250 to the state's Violent Crimes Indemnity Fund. Sellers was indicted by a grand jury and placed on administrative leave in February. His current job status is unclear. A Bridgeport, Connecticut police officer has been fired after assaulting several women over a 4-year period. The Connecticut Post reports that Officer Jason Alterio was fired last Tuesday after a hearing. He was found guilty of violating department regulations on 3 occasions since he became an officer in 2001. In one case, he's being sued for beating a woman after responding to a call at her home. In another case, he was suspended for 60 days for disobeying a court order to stay away from his former girlfriend. The woman claimed that Alterio choked her in that incident. In another case, the officer was stripped of his gun after he stalked and harassed another former girlfriend. Police in Edmonton, Alberta, are experiencing a backlog of police complaints which a local criminologist describes as extraordinary. A report in the Edmonton Sun this week says that of 135 ongoing police complaints files, 40 have been given deadline extensions of 1 year. The extension applies to almost one-third of all complaints, which a University of Alberta criminologist described as an extraordinarily high percentage. A local defense lawyer who has represented many people who have made complaints against the police department said he believes that dragging out investigations is a tactic used by police to protect officers. A review of inquests into police shooting deaths in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, has revealed that in 20 years, not a single officer has faced criminal charges. The review in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel found only 2 inquests in 20 years that did not fully clear the officers involved. Even in those 2 cases, prosecutors declined to pursue charges against the killer officers. An inquest began Monday into another police-related death, and family members of the deceased, along with legislators and even a veteran prosecutor, have expressed concerns with the futility of the inquest process in Milwaukee. A police officer in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, was arrested this week for discharging his weapon from a moving vehicle while he was off duty. Greater Milwaukee Today reports that Officer David Borens is currently free, and his job status has not yet been decided, as his superiors have not seen reports from investigators yet. Borens was charged with disorderly conduct in 2003, but that charge was thrown out by a judge. In Toronto, a police officer who is refusing to speak to investigators probing corruption allegations has prompted the local police services board to consider punishing such officers more severely. The Toronto Star says that Constable Jaroslaw Sislik has so far refused to speak with investigators and will be the subject of a hearing in the fall where he is charged with insubordination. Critics say that if he wins the case, it will be clear that there is a 2-tiered justice system, one for the police and one for everyone else. Punishment for police officers who do not cooperate with investigations is not a clear matter in Toronto, as it is in other North American cities, where officers can be fired without a hearing if they refuse to cooperate. Officers guilty of misconduct are rarely fired in Toronto, and when they are, the matter is often appealed to the Ontario Civilian Commission on Police Services, who usually reinstate the officers. For example, last week the commission reinstated Robert Kelly, a cocaine-addicted Toronto officer who pleaded guilty to drug possession charges in January 2004. Toronto police are warning the public to be on the lookout for a Charleston, South Carolina killer police officer who they believe may be in the area. According to the Toronto Star, Daniel Ayers was recently fired for sexual misconduct with a minor. He is now accused of killing his wife with his service revolver. There have been several sightings of the officer in the Toronto area since he was featured on the TV program America's Most Wanted.
Apparently, they had their hands full in arresting him. Apparently, he only had some socks and a T-shirt as clothing and began to break a window in the municipal building. This is how he gained entrance to the building. It's designed to incapacitate an individual that would not submit to arrest or police orders.
The officers did not act illegally at any time in their confrontation with Mr. Kaiser. In fact, remarkable restraint was shown, which was potentially life-threatening to one of the state troopers. And how much that use of the taser contributed to Mr. Kaiser ingesting this water and this mud, for me, it would only be speculation.
A man died in Fontana, California last week after being shocked twice by sheriff's deputies at a jail with a taser. The man was arrested last Monday on suspicion of being under the influence of a controlled substance. Authorities are considering whether criminal charges will be laid in that case. A man in Albuquerque, New Mexico, who was shocked at least three times by a police taser last week, died 2 days later in hospital. A man in Spring Township, Pennsylvania, died this week after being shocked by police with a taser. Police say the man's heart stopped after they used the taser. He was given medical treatment but died on Monday, 1 day after his confrontation with police. A man in Tustin, California, also died on Monday, also 1 day after police there shocked him with a taser. A police officer in Jacksonville, Florida, was suspended for shocking a 13-year-old girl with a taser while she was handcuffed and in the back of his police cruiser. The officer, G.A. Nelson, has received training as a taser instructor. A police officer in Lakeland, Florida, was suspended last Friday for 29 hours for inappropriate use of a taser against students at the high school where he worked. On one occasion, Officer Michael Branch was asked by a group of basketball players to shock them with his taser, and he did. On another occasion, he shocked two students when they would not get out of his way when he was attempting to break up a fight. A man in South Bend, Indiana, is suing police there after he claims a taser was used to extract a confession from him when he was arrested on March 21st for possession of marijuana. A coroner in Union City, Ohio, where a man died after being shocked by a police taser last week, says that the autopsy revealed that the man had the highest levels of cocaine in his system that they had ever seen. The coroner has determined that the man died of cocaine toxicity. The town of Enfield, Connecticut, decided this week against funding the purchase of tasers for their police department. Taser International released its revised financial figures from last year on Monday. The numbers had to be revised because of a miscalculation involving taxes owed on employee stock options. The adjustment reduced the company's net revenues last year by $243,000 to nearly $19 million. Taser's earnings for the first quarter of this year were a meager $168,000 compared with more than $3.5 million in the same period last year. For the third time in the past 5 months, it has been revealed that Taser International had links to three supposedly independent studies of their products. In January, it was reported that three of four researchers in an independent study were actually employees of Taser International, and one was a paid consultant for the company. 2 weeks ago, we learned that Taser International's chief medical officer was paid $18,000 to act as a consultant on an independent study being conducted at the University of Wisconsin. That study has attracted attention because of its $500,000 price tag paid by the U.S. Department of Justice, and the fact that the study will use animals, which has attracted the attention of animal rights activists. This week, the Arizona Republic revealed that a study conducted by the U.S. Department of Defense, which was called the granddaddy of independent studies by a Taser executive in October, is anything but independent. It turns out that the company's employees, business partners, and a long list of Taser's clients and supporters participated in virtually every aspect of producing this report. The report was touted to investors and police departments as independent proof of the safety of their weapons. Since October, Taser has maintained that they had no involvement in the study, which was conducted by the U.S. Air Force and which helped fuel the sharp rise in Taser stock prices at the end of last year. A coroner's jury at Ontario's first inquest into a Taser-related death in London, Ontario, recommended that all frontline police officers in the province should be equipped with Tasers and trained in their use. The controversial recommendation goes much further than either the provincial government or police departments have gone in their plans to expand Taser use. The jury also determined that Peter Lamonde, who died after being shocked with a Taser by police in London, Ontario, died of cocaine-induced excited delirium on May 14, 2004. Paddy Gilman, whose brother Robert Bagnell died after being shocked with a Taser by police in Vancouver, British Columbia, has been watching the London inquest closely.
I was not at all ready for that recommendation. I was completely bowled over by it, in fact, shocked and appalled. I had expected or hoped, naively I suppose, that the inquest into Peter Lamonde's death would have opened up a long overdue dialogue on the perils of continuing to use tasers in Ontario.
Gilman agrees with other critics who feel that the jury could only make recommendations based on the evidence which was presented to them.
I believe it has everything to do with what the jury heard, and I think the jury heard what they needed to hear to dismiss the tasers within the first day or two of the inquest. From what I understand, the deputy chief coroner for Ontario showed up on day one and handily dismissed the taser's role in Peter's death. And it was significantly ignored from there on in.
Gilman has personally questioned Ontario's deputy chief coroner, Dr. James Cairns, on some of the reasons why he thinks that tasers do not kill people. She has also asked him about how he formed his conclusions about deaths involving tasers.
Well, Dr. Cairns has said specifically that none of the taser-related deaths in Canada can be attributed to taser stun guns. All of the deaths in Canada were determined to have been caused by cocaine-induced excited delirium. Tasers have been cleared of causing any of the deaths in Canada, and that all nine people would have died anyway. What I wanted to know from Dr. Cairns is what information he had to substantiate those statements. I wanted to know if Dr. Cairns had seen anything from my brother's case in the way of a toxicology report or any of his autopsy or pathology results. And Dr. Cairns admitted to me that he had not seen any of that.
Had he received any information about your brother at all?
None. I also went further and asked him if he had seen any of the information like that regarding any of the other deaths outside of Ontario, and he admitted that he had not. And he said to me, "It is my personal opinion that unless a person dies immediately after being shot with a taser, not 5 minutes later, not 30 minutes later, but immediately, then the taser did not kill them." And he said to me that it was his personal opinion. With regard to the Toronto Police Service Board looking at purchasing tasers, I heard him say on the radio one day that he had reviewed mountains of independent data.
Oh. Well, then we all know now how independent that data has turned out to be.
And how many mountains there are, right. Yeah, how independent that data has turned out to be indeed.
Dr. Cairns also believes that all of the deaths linked to tasers in Canada are the result of excited delirium. According to Alan Benner, a former psychologist with the San Francisco Police Department, and S. Marshall Isaacs of the San Francisco Department of Health, excited delirium is not a recognized medical or psychiatric condition. Despite this, the London inquest has determined that cocaine-induced excited delirium was the cause of death for Peter Lamonde. Dr. Cairns is also one of the country's leading researchers of excited delirium.
some of the information on excited delirium is so involved that it's just beyond me to even understand what it is that they're trying to say. But as I said to you earlier, from what I understand, the term excited delirium is the result of some foggy science that nobody has acknowledged that it actually exists, or, well, I guess some people have acknowledged that it exists when it's to their benefit.
Nonetheless, Gilman is encouraged by the controversy around tasers in the United States.
Sure, I'm happy that they're not making the huge profits that they were making. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that many police departments in the U.S. have scaled back their taser use and purchase, and many departments have outright banned tasers. Here, Ontario goes forward with wanting to purchase tasers for all of its frontline officers at the same time that these departments down south are coming to see that there could be a problem here, and it could be time to take another look at tasers. And I think that's going to impact taser's bottom line for sure.
About 1 month after the death of Peter Lamonde, the subject of the London inquest, Paddy Gilman's brother Robert Bagnell died after being shocked with a police taser in Vancouver. A coroner's inquest into that death was supposed to begin this week. Gilman tells us what she knows about the delay.
The inquest was tentatively scheduled to start on the 24th of May. And I guess probably about a month and a half ago, it was postponed indefinitely. And they say it was because it was due to the complexity of my brother's case. The members of the external investigation team have requested a 60-day extension. This is the Office of the Police Complaints Commissioner in British Columbia has granted the external team a second extension, and this extension is for 60 days, and that goes to the 21st of June. And that's just to compile the information.
Do you know what they have to do after that?
After that, from what I understand, everything goes to the Chief of Police of Vancouver. And he digests everything that he receives, and then he puts his spin on it for public consumption.
Before the inquest?
Before the inquest.
Have they told you when you're going to be informed as to when this is going to take place?
They have not. They haven't told us very much of anything. We haven't been privy to any of the documentation. We haven't seen a toxicology report. We haven't seen anything from Robert's autopsy or pathology reports. We haven't seen anything. And they're not releasing anything to us pending the ongoing investigation. So we're becoming quite frustrated. It's been almost a year. It'll be a year on the 23rd of June since he died, and we don't know anything more than we knew on the 23rd of June, 2004.
At the end of the last century, a revolutionary pulsed energy weapon called the Advanced Taser M26 was created to take away your control. Its impulses can infiltrate your neural network from a hit anywhere on the body, stopping even subjects under the influence of hyperstimulants, PCP, cocaine, or methamphetamines. Improve officer safety. Avoid litigation. Save lives. Taser X26. Safety every officer deserves.
Other than the killings already reported on this week's program, police also killed people this week in Wyandanch, New York, Memphis, Tennessee, Dayton, Ohio, Lakeside, California, Fontana, California, where police shot and killed a man in addition to the taser death reported earlier, Vallejo, California, Orange County, Florida, Tampa, Florida, Oswego, Illinois, and Portland, Oregon. That's all for this week. Tune in to this station for more next week. Email comments and story ideas to ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to everyone who sent in material for this week's show, and special thanks to Patty Gilman for speaking to us about tasers again. From CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, I'm Ron Anisich. Each week we end Bad Cop No Donut with some music. This week is no exception.
Let's get the stuff okay. You don't have. All right, this one I know you don't have. Cops prowl at night, looking to steal, looking to rob you blind. Cops prowl at night, looking to steal, looking to steal. You look like you got money, girl, enough for cops to trace, but not enough to hire a lawyer to defend your case. If you try complaining, girl, they shoot you like a thug, then stick a spare gun in your hand and say you were on drugs. Cops prowl at night, looking for girls to rape. Cops prowl at night, looking for girls. Girl, you got a pretty face and you got a pretty car, and that will make the cops come sniffing anywhere you are. Cops come sniffing at your crotch and sniffing at your purse. The one they will treat badly and the other they treat worse. Cops prowl at night, hunting the poor to kill. Cops prowl at night, hunting the poor. So if you go out driving, take a transmitting video cam. Keep the receiver hidden well when the cops come to exam. Once they know the whole world watching, they turn so polite. They may be bullies in the dark, but they're not so brave in the light.